always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Thursday afternoon. Yeah, that's what we'll call it. I'd say it's fine. It's really nice where I am. By you guys. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about the NBA's approach to stopping tanking. Adam Silver said he had enough, and he has made it very clear by way of these rules that he has had enough. I have some questions about how all of this is going to work and some of the unintended consequences that are going to come about from this. Also have some questions about the timing. There is literally a playoff game tonight, game six of this great OKC San Antonio Spurs series has been going on. And I would imagine some time on their pregame show is going to be devoted to discussing and debating this these anti-tanking rules that Adam Silver has put into place. So that doesn't seem ideal. I also want to talk about what this says about Adam Silver and the focus and what he actually cares about in the league. So I guess we'll discuss that. And then look, this is a Lakers show. My role in covering the Lakers whenever anything happens is, all right, how can I relate this to the Lakers? This one's pretty easy. So we'll discuss, you know, what a world without tanking would mean for the Lakers as you know, they try to build around Luka. And then finally, before, you know, obviously the Q&A towards the end of the show, we'll also talk about Giannis and how the league might have just completely bleeped over the Milwaukee Bucks. So, yeah, honestly, for a random Thursday after the Lakers have already been eliminated from the NBA playoffs, this is kind of a packed show. So let's go ahead and dive on in. Here we go. A quick reminder, please hit that like button. Please hit that share button. Please hit that subscribe button, both to the show and to the pod, if that is how you're taking this in. Turn on notifications for the show. Turn on notifications for YouTube so you get the notifications for the show. And then today's show, as all of our shows here on YouTube, are brought to you in part by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and make a $5 lineup of your own and then get $50 worth of free lineups on Prize Picks. Again, Prize Picks is where to do that. I've been having a lot of fun here might dip into that app again tonight as we get together to watch a fascinating game between the San Antonio Spurs and Oklahoma City Thunder. All right, so let's start though with the tanking rules and what some of them are, and I don't want to get too deep into the weeds here because, frankly, I just see that as an opportunity to bore a lot of you guys. so like I'm not gonna pull up the graphic. I'm not gonna get into the specifics here. It's called this 3-2-1 system, meaning I guess that there are like three tiers that teams can kind of sort of find themselves in. They're talking about, you know, teams can't pick in the top five in three consecutive seasons. You can't pick number one twice in a row. They didn't. According to Jake Fisher, they haven't figured out what's going to happen if teams do, you know, land in the top five three consecutive years. Like, what's going to happen to that top five pick in that third year? Or what would happen to the first overall pick the following year if the same team happens to win the lottery twice? You can't protect picks top 12 through 15 in trades. How they arrived at that number, I look forward to finding out one day. In the second round, the first 16 picks are in inverse order. So that means the team that picks last in the lottery will pick first in the second round. That's going to convolute a lot of the conversation around second round picks. Those might just not get traded anymore, because now all of a sudden, if you're at the back end of the lottery and you have a second rounder, that might be essentially a first round pick. Remember, we talked just like about this just yesterday, where a high second round pick is seen in some circles around the NBA as more valuable as a low first round pick, because the contractual obligations to a second rounder in the NBA are actually lessened by quite a bit. And so now, if you're like a mid-tier NBA team and you're considering trading a second rounder, you better get a pretty damn good player for that second rounder. So that might further complicate trades. That's great, Adam. Let's see. These rules that are being put into place, this is kind of a testing window through the 2029 season. And then at the 2029 season, they will decide whether or not they're going to fully ratify these rules and make them permanent. And then finally, and probably most notably, honestly, all they needed to do, in my opinion, they granted Adam Silver the ability to reduce teams' lottery odds, modify teams' draft positions, and impose significant fines to teams that they think are tanking. And honestly, you could have just skipped all of that other stuff and just done that. But unfortunately, if you do that, that would require Adam Silver having a spine, which he does not. Honestly, a feat of physics that dude gets to stay vertical. The tanking rules themselves are very convoluted, very litigious, as you would expect them to be coming from the mind of Adam Silver. They seem to present a lot of pitfalls and loopholes and unintended consequences. Some that we can recognize now and some that we might recognize down the road. One potential pitfall here is, you know, if they expanded the lottery to include the first two teams that are eliminated from the play-in, right? So, you know, those two teams are now being included in the lottery, which means if you're one of those two teams, and probably more specifically, if you're the 10 seed in either conference, you're asking yourself, all right, do I want to win this game for the chance at winning another game to only have the opportunity to play against the top team in the conference and get slaughtered by that team? Most teams, honestly, presented with that scenario are going to say, eh. And then now that they're being included in the lottery, they're probably saying, wait, I could jump significantly. And like, that's the downside to losing this play-in game. Like, are we going to see teams tanking a play-in game? I guess in that circumstance, in that hypothetical, the league discipline aspect of this would come into account, where if Adam Silver thinks that a team is not trying its hardest in his play-in tournament, I would hope he would grow a spine and make that team forfeit the pick or pay millions of dollars in fines. But, you know, we'll see if Silver is ever willing to do that. It's overall, I didn't understand the timing of this. I didn't understand why this is a thing that like Adam Silver just desperately needs to get to. And by asking that question, why, you know, whether it's why now, why these rules, why this issue, we arrive at a lot of conclusions about Adam Silver that I've been at for a while, but I think are kind of inarguable at this point. Adam Silver, when presented with something that he cares about, has in the past operated quickly, right? Got rid of Donald Sterling with the quickness. Remember when the Euro foul, right? Where, in order to stop a fast break, guys would just reach out and foul somebody. And that was taking away transition opportunities, which are some of the most exciting plays in the sport. Adam Silver at that point, they only had the clear path foul, but now they also have the take foul as kind of a technical foul that referees can dole out. They're kind of inconsistent with those calls. I think sometimes they need to be reminded by the guys on the court or on the sideline that the take foul is an option there. Oftentimes they won't call it until somebody will be like, take foul, right? Take. You guys can at least talk about it. But like overall, Adam Silver saw that as a problem facing the watchability of the league and acted really relatively quickly and has, for the most part, gotten rid of a lot of those fouls, right? And now, now that the tanking got so bad this year and teams spent so much of this last season tanking as they did, and did so so obviously, Adam Silver has said, you know what? Enough. We're getting rid of this shit, or I'm at least trying. And he gets all of this done with the quickness. And, you know, he was asked about flopping the other day, and he was on McAfee, and he, gave some answer that, like, players have always been taught to accentuate calls and that he has seen players falling, but so long as it isn't, convincing referees consistently enough that there is a call, that he doesn't really see a problem with it. And his answer was frankly offensive. Like, his answer was that of a person who has never played basketball or watched basketball. If a player is falling so frequently as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has, that you have Tom Haberstroh out there of Yahoo literally charting the amount of falls after shots that Shai has, then that would indicate that it's become pretty obvious, right? And for there to be enough players around the league that you could say, yeah, Shai is bad, but is he that much worse than so-and-so? And is that player that much worse than so-and-so? And, so on and so forth. And like, for so much of the conversation about these playoffs to be about flopping and refereeing and all of that, would indicate to me that fans are kind of sick of this. And, I look, obviously, out here in rural Texas, where I live about a half hour north of Austin, but I'm in the burbs. And here in rural Texas, people probably feel a certain way about NBA players. So there's kind of nothing that those guys could do to get in the good graces of some of my neighbors, whatever. But even still, like, when I ask when I talk about the playoffs, or one of my neighbors brings up, yeah, man, like, what do you think of that game last night? What do you think about this Lakers matchup? What do you think about this? And then somebody else overhears us talking about the NBA playoffs. It's always some comments of like, yeah, I can't watch it, man. It's too many free throws. Or I can't watch it, man. It's so much flopping. If I want flopping, I'd watch soccer. And like, outside of the, granted, often very thinly veiled racism that I'll sometimes encounter out here, there are, I think, some like actual fair critiques of the basketball that we're watching. And I do think flopping is probably the league's biggest watchability issue. And I know that online, there's a lot of people who are saying, gosh, if you weren't focused so much on free throws and if we weren't talking so much about refereeing, we could just celebrate how great these players are. And it's like, okay, but ignoring a problem doesn't make the problem go away. And at a time where, you know, there is so much competition for eyes, fixing watchability should be a league's or a commissioner's biggest, should be his top priority. And it just isn't, right? Based on the way he hasn't acted, the way Adam Silver hasn't acted on flopping and stuff like that, compared to how he has acted on these other issues, Silver doesn't care about it. He himself has talked about how he doesn't think this is a problem. And I just flatly disagree. Now, I was kind of wondering, like, why wouldn't Silver care about this, given that it has dominated the online discourse about these playoffs to the extent that it has? A playoff, by the way, that have been phenomenal. Like, this series between the Thunder and the Spurs has been an all-timer. It's been excellent basketball. And yet, oftentimes, the focus, because anytime the game starts getting close, the referees take it upon themselves, especially in Oklahoma City, to grant Shea 13 free throws or whatever. Like, you know, given how much of this discourse about has been about refereeing and flopping and stuff like that, you would think Silver would care, but he clearly doesn't. I was wondering why, and I think the answer to that is actually pretty simple. Tanking risks, or teams losing on purpose, puts at risk the bottom line, right? You look at the arenas of some of those teams that started tanking way back in like January this year, and you look at their arenas by the end of the season, and they are libraries. They are mausoleums. Like, they are just, there's just, it's not the setting and it's not the visual that Silver wants. And those owners, you know, who have seen, like, the other part of this too, is that, like, when I talk to people about, like, the league, whether it be, you know, regular fans or whatever, but especially like casual fans, I'll ask, like, do you care about tanking? And they'll say, no. Like, honestly, depending on what fan base I am kind of talking to, or whatever team this hypothetical fan that I'm talking to, I love to do this at like Summer League, right? Where you have so many different fan bases all in Vegas at the one time. I like to just kind of talk to people as I walk around and ask, like, just get a general sense for the things that fans kind of care about. And I'll ask, like, do you care about tanking? Is that something that, like, you guys honestly, like, are worried about? And if it's like a Wizards fan or a Kings fan or some of these other teams that don't really have access to superstar talent any other way, those fan bases generally say, like, no, if anything, we welcome it. We root for our team to lose so that eventually maybe we can get a Wemby, or maybe we can get a, you know, a castle or whatever. Unfortunately for the Spurs, and unfortunately for the league, the Spurs got both those guys. But like, I just don't get the sense, like, I do think that, like, tanking and teams losing on purpose is a problem. I'm not saying it isn't. But if I compare the discourse about tanking to the discourse about flopping, it's not even close. It's not, like, far more people say, like, you know, roll their eyes when I watch basketball games with them because they see these 6'7", 6'8", chiseled Avenger guys falling at the lightest touch, you know, and it does make people say, oh, cool, it's a soft leg, great. They see these hand check calls and they see some of the physicality, you know, taken out of the sport, and they say, all right. And you know, you compare that to the number of people who care about tanking. I just don't think people really care much about tanking.
Bye, everyone.